Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special edition of the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra with myself, Mark Mayo, assistant editor of the Tarlhurst End website. As you may know, the Royal Oak Park project has really kicked into gear these past few weeks, with the council approving the latest outline for the £500 million development around the Medeski Stadium. So, I called up with Reading Councillor and a member of the planning committee, Ashley Pearce, to get some answers on the burning issues that you may have seen us discuss on the site and podcast recently. We begin by Ashley informing us of his political past and his love of the Royals.
So, I've been a Reading fan for a very long time, 15 years at least, season ticket holder. The home and away for quite a long time. I've been a councillor for on Reading Council in Church Ward in South Reading now for this is my third year coming up to, and I've been on the planning committee, which is obviously what we're going to be interested in today, for 2 years now.
So how long has this sort of Royal Elm Park thing been going on in terms of the council? Have they been known about it for a number of years now, or is it something that's recently come up, as it were?
I believe 2015, January, was when the council and Reading Football Club were first negotiating. So it's been going back and forth with the two parties for over a year now, a couple of years, with amendments being made and discussions on each side. So they've known about it for quite some time.
Okay, cool. And who's like the leading the Reading side of things? Who's the point of contact for the council for Reading Football Club?
Lead planning officer is Alison Anwar, who's head of planning in the officer side. And then the councillor side, we've got Marion Livingston is the chair of planning. And Tony Page is also been quite party to the discussions.
As you'll know from the article that we put up about a week ago now, One of the first questions that I kind of had about Royal Elm Park was going back in the history of it. Remember, the Medeski Stadium site was sold to Sir John Medeski for like pittance, basically, on the basis that he was going to develop up a nice sort of a stadium effectively and develop what was effectively, or what literally was, a rubbish tip. Fast forward to now, and we've got an area of land that is obviously very valuable, has obviously got potential, and it's being developed what is effectively foreign money, in that the Thais are putting the investment in, and they also own the land, I believe. Is that correct? They own the land there?
As far as I'm aware, yes.
Yeah, so that's as far as I'm aware as well. So, I mean, there's conditions that have been set out, so feel free to kind of bring those in as well. But what is the council really gaining from this project going through?
To go back to the start, see, I was young and certainly not around on the council when the sale of the land went through.
It's a little misleading.
Obviously, it's reported it looks better from the people I've asked and dug into this. Obviously, the sale was for a pound, makes headline news, but the land was pretty much unusable, and the club had to go and clear the land and make it fit for use. You've also got the fact that In when it was being done, 96-97, the sort of explosion in land prices wasn't what it was. But I think the most important thing, which wouldn't really, or it wasn't, I don't think, made much of at the time that I've been told, was that the sale of Elm Park was conditioned quite heavily on the land being given for such a small amount over where the Medeski now is. So the sale of the Elm Park land, if it was given at market price, the club would have got a lot more money than they did, on condition that many of the houses there were housing association council houses, and you know what we sort of now deem to be affordable. We'll get onto that bit later of how affordable that is. So it wasn't quite as clear as the £1 sale back then. And I think you should point out quite fairly in the article that, you know, what we get as a town and the council, you've got hundreds of jobs, over 800 jobs, full-time, part-time, temporary, permanent, of varying degrees, much-needed homes that we're going to get. Again, we'll get back to that, but some of them affordable. Nigel Howe was very open on the night of planning committee and was even party to opening a health centre. There's a lot of work to go on to that. So there's a bit of history there and a bit of, you know, the town will be getting some sort of the solid things out of this.
So I think that the fact that its land is effectively foreign owned is a kind of, the council's hands are tied in that respect, isn't it? It's very hard for the council to have an impact as to where money that is made out of this, does it go back to the people who have put the money in, the ties, or does it go to the club, or does...
The planning application at the moment is what's called an outline planning application. So despite the fact that in my 2 years it's the most detailed and lengthy planning application I've read through, it's an outline planning application, which means it's got to come back many more times with much more detail. But in the application it says that any plan will be of benefit to the club and local community. And Nigel Howe is quite keen to point out that that will remain the case as it goes through various stages of the future planning process with more conditions put on it. If it doesn't benefit the club or town in the council's view, then they won't get these bits of planning that are in the conditions that they still need. So in terms of where the money is going, as far as we're aware, it's Reading Football Club's money. Obviously, the takeover, as far as I'm aware, hasn't gone through yet to anyone else.
Yeah.
I still think it goes. It is Reading Football Club's money rather than anyone else's.
Obviously, there's tax takes, which I kind of alluded to in the article. Are you able to kind of go into any more detail as to where the council will specifically be having these, like in terms of from the restaurants and stuff that will be on the land, the conference centre, what kind of money is generated through that for the council and whatnot?
With those ones, the commercial ones, until there are more accurate and more detailed planning things that come along when they're for sure. So, for example, in the square, we don't know yet what or how many restaurants, bars, shops there are going to be. That will come forward in the future plan application, so they won't know. But that will be privy to business rate take at the rate that we applicable. And the only thing outlined in the current planning application is the level of council tax that will be relevant to be paid by the residents of the new housing. Which I believe is around £850,000 a year, but I would have to check that.
Okay, cool. So is that these sort of rates and everything, these are locally set or are they more centrally set from Westminster?
The business rates are centrally set from Westminster, so we don't have any power on raising, lowering those, and the council tax is locally set. So that's the only one that we would have any power over, which would be the residents' one.
So let's move on to something else very close to the stadium then, and the situation of the old Speedway track, I think, is quite an interesting one for a lot of fans at the moment, because it's personally, when I park at the stadium, that is where I go at the moment, and it's always been a bit in flux as to which parts of it I use and who's working there, how much it is, etc. What's your knowledge of who owns the land, who's operating that as a car park, and the future of it as well with Royal Elm Park?
I had to do some digging for that one. As far as I'm aware, it's on a long-term lease to a company called M&G Properties, who have, I don't know how long the lease is, but I'm told it's a long lease.
Yeah.
And they have been in the past sort of come forward with some plans and haven't really fully gone through with them. They want to do some things that might not be appropriate. So it's basically on a long-term lease to a private company who, in my mind and probably your mind, don't appear to be using the land as usefully or as even, you know, raising as much revenue as they could. But it is privately owned or is on a private lease. So it would have to be down to the club to wish to engage with them to want to do that. So with that, I think it's completely down to the club of whether they would wish to engage with this company to expand it or if the football club themselves were gonna run it.
Okay, so that is much land around the stadium. Do you know if that's in long-term lease? Or most of it's pretty much all standard privately owned, isn't it? That's not very common, is it?
Yeah, I don't think, yeah. I think that obviously the bit that the club owns and then the majority of it is private. So it's down to the club's wishes, which, you know, we'll get on to in a minute with the transport. In, you know, the plans I've seen from what Nigel Howe said and just from the general way that the club appears to be going with this, I don't, they are trying to go sort of with the Brighton model, but with buses rather than trains, as it is down in Brighton. To my mind, it doesn't look like the club would be wishing more parking space. You know, that's purely speculative, but for me, it looks like they're trying to get people away from cars, not moving towards them. But it would be completely a decision down to the club of whether they wish to sort of pursue the Greyhound track.
Yeah, and on the terms of transport, because the Green Park railway station has been named quite often in the literature from the club and whatnot, does this bring this closer? Does it kind of, does Royal Elm Park being a thing help Green Park railway station become a thing?
Straight answer to that is no, but it should be, it will be a thing anyway.
Okay.
It's all paid for, it's in place from you know, Network Rail, the station is all paid for. It's due to open December 2018, and that will be before any work or any opening, certainly, of any of the new Royal Elm Park development. So it was due anyway. Whether planning permission was granted last week or not, the station would have been open, you know, privy to delays, as I'm sure these things are. But at the moment, the plan is December 2018 for it to open. And I believe between 2 to 4 trains per hour, sort of on match days. And it's going to be a similar size to Reading West. So it will form part of the sort of transport platform to get people to the stadium. But it isn't going to be sort of a whole solution. It isn't going to be the Brighton-esque get everyone in and out and back
yeah.
again.
Well, what seems to be, as you say, the buses do seem to be that solution. I will have a little side point. I did note that on one of the PBA event planning document that they have on the Reading Council website said that if the stadium was going to be expanded to 35,000, which is in the plans, interestingly enough, it basically said that the buses were going to take all of that extra 15,000 slack, which shows perhaps how that's not really considered much of a reality at the moment.
What didn't come up on the night of planning, but as a fan rather than a councillor, that is exactly what I thought. The numbers didn't seem to match up, and the club have an existing planning application open for the expansion from when that was passed a few years back. Cannot see any time soon that's going to be put forward, to be honest.
Yeah, and it seems like something that would obviously, in terms of event management and whatnot, it'd have to be fixed up anyway. So
yes.
With these buses that are going to be laid on, the question I had is, won't the roads just be clogged with buses? What kind of solutions and what kind of foresight is there regarding this at the moment?
Yeah, on the night that was, I've been going by bus for many years. On the night that was one of my biggest concerns and sort of lines of inquiry. In the initial plans, which is one of the questions I asked, they said it could take up to an hour and 45 minutes. That's been severely diminished. I think what had happened is they were going almost far too worst case scenario. And I think that was a 35,000 stadium and taking 5 minutes to load a bus without ticketless operating. So they now are down to an hour maximum that they believe they can clear the buses. And they hope that is still a worst case and it will be lower than that. Ticketless busing. So you'll be getting on the ticket. There will be no fumbling for change, showing the driver any tickets. That won't be happening. Obviously, they're going to be fully subsidised, the buses. You're having stacked buses. So at the moment, if you're getting the bus to town, obviously everyone's queuing for that one bus at the front. And then you let everyone on the other buses. That won't be the case. It will be a line of buses and everyone will get on the bus if they're going to the town route. All the other sort of suburban buses will be loaded at the same time. And then it will just be a case of getting them out, which isn't too dissimilar to now. So at the moment, whilst they're stacked in sort of that row of threes that they've got, they'll be stacked in one line, which will make it a bit slower snaking out, but it should be a bit quicker getting them on. So I think the message from Nigel Howe on the night, I think, was that there will be a bit of a delay compared to what there is now, but I don't think it will be significant. And one of the other things that I think Nigel Howe was quite keen to press was that he did see or foresee the future with the square and bars and things, that people would stagger their leaving times. And, you know, one of my points was I'm not sure that's that realistic. Fans have got their habits and you know, get to the ground and leave. But I think the club certainly want to see it as more some people to see it as a destination to spend half an hour after the game before, so it isn't clogged.
Yeah, well, let's tackle that. I was going to ask about who exactly, like, where the money's coming from in terms of the buses and whatnot, but I presume that is still effectively just from the club. That's in the paperwork, it just says Reading FC.
Yes, and that's the question I asked. I was a bit more specific and said, would the ticket price be reflected, the bus ticket price reflected in match ticket prices going up, and Nigel Howe basically said no, but obviously ticket prices can go up for other reasons. So, you know, I think, yeah, for example, if we stayed in, go up this year and stayed in the Premiership for the next 5 years, I don't think it's the cost of the buses that will be pushing the tickets up. So it'll be incorporated in the ticket price.
You were talking about the club's hopes, basically, that it becomes something, and I've sensed this as well, that it becomes somewhere people go at like 12:30, have some lunch, and then they go to the game, then they might have a drink afterwards. How much control and how much focus is the council putting on exactly what goes into this square? Because as I said in the article, having a Nando's is great for a Tuesday evening, but it's not the type of thing where you can put 3,000 Leeds fans, for example.
That was actually, I asked that question without wanting to name any particular club. And Nigel Howe actually mentioned Leeds as well. Goes back to the event management plans, that bit, which will be different for each game. And, you know, that it was a few days before the Wigan game, the games are planning. You know, if it's a couple of hundred Wigan fans who, you know, generally in the past have been no bother with us and there's a very low police presence, I think with games like that, it will be seen as they'll just mingle, they'll go in before, you know, perhaps the aforementioned Nando's. With the others, I think it will be a very similar thing to what currently happens with when, you know, Leeds United or other clubs come to the Reading Town Centre. I think the police will have a plan, the club will have a plan to take them certain places. And, you know, this is a guess, but from the club's point of view, I don't think they're going to want 3,000 Leeds United fans in that square. And the event management plan would have to see that. In terms of what is going to be around, the club haven't put forward those detailed proposals yet. So, going back to it's an outline plan, the one that's been passed. They have to come back with further thing. So if they put forward inappropriate proposals that didn't go to planning requirements, they still wouldn't get planning permission for those particular units by the stadium. And then they've got to go through the licensing committee as well, if they want to sell alcohol any late night as well. Because, you know, apart from that, you've obviously got the conference and things going on. In that area is largely going to be a residential area for the, you know, 95-99% of the year when Reading FC aren't playing. So, you know, then the council aren't going to allow anyone to set up, you know, be open till 2 a.m. So it's still got to go through planning for the units to get permission initially, and then it's got to go through the licensing committee to get the further bits as well. So there's still quite a lot of council oversight to go yet.
Sure. One of the things that currently are outside the stadium are those kind of pop-up West Berkshire Beer Company, I think it is, and a few of those. Are they under any jurisdiction for what's been passed, or are those still as they were?
That's on existing requirements from licensing, and Nigel Howe mentioned them on the night as well. I think they've been very successful. That's a club decision. That's as far as we're concerned, they still wouldn't be affected at the moment.
Cool. So let's move on to what will be on in Royal Elm Park itself then. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier and is quite a point of more of a political point of view than a fan point of view, but the affordable housing is something that people are keen to know about, especially when it comes to this part of the country. Affordable housing, the definition of which tends to vary depending on who you talk to. So what's the current state of play with that?
The government definition is anything affordable is, I believe, 80% of market rate, which, as you said, and I don't know, you're probably in a similar position to me, I don't think we're too dissimilar in age. I don't own my own house yet and I'm saving for a deposit. 80% of market rate in this area isn't ideal, but it's all we can do. We're not allowed to, if it's going to be feasible, we've got to run off what the government has set. And again, Nigel Howe on the evening was very open about it and quite amenable to what we were saying. So there will be 10% of the housing on site is going to be affordable, and that's mainly made up of shared ownership, housing associations. And the other thing that we pressed for, and we're still pressing for more, hopefully we can get more, is that the first units that will go up Royal Elm Park will be the affordable ones. So it won't be that we're waiting 5 years until the whole thing is built to get those affordable ones. So it's not ideal. We don't pretend it is, but we are sort of tied somewhat.
Yeah, I suppose that's possibly something that will change on June 8th, but we will see about that certainly. going forward. One of the other things that's currently planned is a hotel. Now, obviously, there's a hotel at the Medeski Stadium. Is one going to affect the other? Are these kind of mutually assured things going on?
Yeah, I had to do some digging with this for some people I know in the area, as in that area of business. The straight answer was no. As people that live in Reading, I've never stayed in a hotel in Reading. I've always lived here, so I've had no need. I think if you live in Reading, it seems like we've got an abundance of hotels. You've got the Hilton just down the road as well. But their occupation rate is very high, and I have it on good authority that they are full. So, you know, whether needed or not, for what we might believe, it's the commercial decision that they are going to be filled. And obviously with the commercial centre as well happening, and you know, Green Park next door, I think they're going to need more spaces still.
Okay, fair enough. So that's one of the things. Another thing that's been raised and certainly caught my attention was the ice rink, and I can't work out, is this going to be a permanent feature or is this going to be a temporary feature?
I believe permanent, so it's not going to be sort of the ice thing that's put into Forbury Garden every Christmas, but permanent as far as I'm aware. Speaking to people at the council, there have been three plans for an ice rink in 25 years that haven't quite made it through. So, and obviously very different from Reading Football Club doing it. So, for some reason, commercial entities believe we need an ice rink. So, they must believe they're going to make money out of it.
Okay, so do you know of any other potential things that got sort of banded about but didn't make the final cut? Because as I said in the article, there's theatre, arena sort of lacking in the town at the moment. Were they ever on the table?
No, as far as I'm aware, they were dead set on an ice rink. It didn't change from that, from the very outset.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, if there's any final points you want to make on it, just to assure fans, then feel free. But I'm out of questions. It's been fascinating talking to you tonight, and I'm very thankful for you coming on and having a chat to us.
Yeah, thank you. Just to reiterate something that was said earlier, that it's an ongoing process. If people still have concerns, it's got to go through many more stages of planning and licensing for things, and refer back to the application to get the application passed. It says any plan will benefit the club and local community. So any further stages, it has got to pass that test before it does get any further with anything they want.
So there we have it then, guys. Thank you very much for listening in all the way through that fascinating chat with Ashley, who hopefully we may well be in touch with in the future, and we can chat more on Royal Elm Park as this quite fascinating development happens in the town and around the football club. I've been Mark Mayer. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the Tilehurst End for everything you'll need on Royal Elm Park and Reading Football Club going future. And all that's left to say, as ever, is come on, you ass.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tilehurst End
and facebook.com/thetilehurstend.